Hello, everyone. This is Connie Shaw, your host for Awakening Talks with Compelling People, where we interview leading lights and emerging figures in the fields of wellness, spirituality, and selfless service. Today's guest is Virginia Virgil of Rumney, New Hampshire, who'll tell us what Mother Mary has said about community, about Americans as a people, the four types of worldly love as compared to spiritual love, the seven major cosmic laws, and the concept of deservedness and the reception of God's gifts to us. Welcome to the show, Jenny.
Thank you, Connie. It's a pleasure to be here and talking to you.
Well, we're delighted that we'll have some time to spend on these very intriguing topics. But first, I'd like to have you share with our audience when Mary first began to come to you and what her essential first messages were and how long ago that was. If you could tell us that in about three or four sentences.
It all started in the late 1980s and has continued ever since and occurs at will, morning, noon, and night, depending on, what is asked of her and what she gives me.
And what would you say is Mary's primary overall message to us at this time?
Well, working through me as a channel, Mother Mary is really focusing on the importance of the law of love and how much love, a role love plays in this world, its value and function, which she has said has never really been fully understood or appreciated, but it is really the use of unconditional love that literally makes the world go round and figuratively as well. And her sense is that this has got to be reawakened because with it goes gratitude and a sense of reverence for life.
Yes, well, you know, one of the many hats that I wear is also being a Marian visionary, and I'm quite aware since Mary first began coming to me in 1980 that she has said she is contacting 400 people on the earth right now, and my understanding, since I interact with many Marian visionaries and locutionists, is that she deals with each person quite individually according to their understanding, their level of spiritual development and awareness, their particular orientation, culture, religious affiliation, and their level of intelligence and the depth of their life experience and wisdom. So I am always intrigued and appreciative of the fact that just as we relate to each of our loved ones and friends and colleagues uniquely according to their particular personality, she does the same thing with us. So when she's talked with you, Jenny, about the four types of worldly love, what are they and how do they contrast with the law of unconditional love that you just mentioned? So the four types of worldly love would be?
Romantic is the first one, finding the perfect soulmate or the person that's going to really have to be your clone in order to love you the way you want. And as she said, that one doesn't last that long. And material love, which of course is buy, barter, sell, and trade based on monetary acquisitions and material acquisitions, and sexual love, and then sentimental love. And sentimental love, of course, is that which we display because I'm the mother, and I expect you to do so-and-so, or I'm the father, and I expect so-and-so. So sentimental love, as well as the other three, always have strings attached. There's always an expectation of a return on your investment.
So in other words, there's always an agenda. There's a plan, although it may not be apparent. There is some sort of expectation of reward one way or the other that's lurking in the background.
Right. I'll love you when, I'll love you if, I love you but. Those are always little strings attached. And the unconditional love, of course, has no strings attached. And the only way that I really think the proof is in the pudding is to look at how many times we're allowed to come back. God has never given up on us. Sometimes I wonder why. But at any rate, there is just constant love flowing to us, and there are gifts of that love that prove that. And that's what I express gratitude for every single day, are those gifts that fly to me no matter what. I don't have to earn or merit them. I just have to be open to and feel worthy of receiving them and then use them for my spiritual benefit.
So in other words then, Jenny, there is no such thing as needing to earn God's love or the gifts that we are given, that everybody automatically deserves the love of God because we are God's children.
Exactly. And there are several gifts that go with this love that really are there to help us get back on our spiritual path and then take us forward.
And what are those?
Well, the first one is the gift of life. A lot of people poo-poo it and say, I wish I weren't here. But as Mary said, no one's here by accident or chance. All of us asked to come here, so we all belong here. The second one is that each of us has a thread of divine light to weave in God's tapestry of light and love that's been designed for Earth that no one else can duplicate. So each one of us has a specific task to accomplish, and so everyone is needed here. Then our needs are constantly being filled by the God within, as long as they, of course, connect with our growth and service. And all of our attributes, resources, and talents are God-given. We've been given two spiritual built-in mentors, our soul's voice of intuition, and our still small voice of our Christ-conscious self that we can turn to for guidance on what we need to do to grow and serve, along with advice on how to accomplish them. The gift of reincarnation gives us lots of opportunities to learn to use our energy in unconditionally loving ways. We go through spiritual tests and lessons, repay our karmic debts, and learn to interpret and respond to our life experiences through our hearts. We have the gift of free will. We have the elemental kingdom that not only sustains us, but as the builders and sustainers of all form, produces the beautiful artworks in nature that give us so much pleasure. So I would say the angels answer our prayers so long as they are light-filled, and then Mother, Father, God are always there for us. So every day I thank God for those blessings. It's a lot.
Absolutely. So then, just to recap that, the gift of life, our unique thread of divine life, the gift of reincarnation, free will, nature, angels, and the elemental kingdom. You know, a Christian minister told me recently that until the Middle Ages, there were many, many scores and scores of references to reincarnation in the Bible, but of course the Bible has been rewritten and expunged and deleted and changed and amplified in a variety of ways over the centuries, but he said that there are still 33 references to reincarnation that remain in the Bible to this day. So the Essenes and the early Christians indeed did believe in the law of the return cycle. Now, speaking of laws, can you familiarize us, Jenny, with the seven major cosmic laws that Mary has talked with you about?
These are seven laws, she said, that we need to live by on Earth. They're the same laws that rule her realm, or the Ascended Master realm, but she said that if we live by just one of these laws, the other six will automatically fall in line. So it isn't as though we have to go through every single law. It's just take one that's your favorite and, learn to live by it, and you really be home free. But the first law is that of embodiment, and it's as God's children, our purpose on earth is to fulfill a divine embodiment plan of spiritual growth, service, followed by ascension. The second law is the law of karma. Most people probably know it as cause and effect. And what we send around will come back around magnified by 10.
Yes.
She said that setting causes into motion that promote spiritual growth, service, and ascension produce effects that benefit others, our planet, and us, because they add to our light, that of others, and again, the planet. The law of unconditional love, what we do with our God-given talents, resources, and attributes in unconditional love endures, because it is selfless and honors and glorifies God. Then the law of harmony, when we focus on and perceive only the goodness, the intelligence, the purity and beauty of the God light inherent in the energy that composes and ties all form together, we experience a sense of oneness with all. The next law, which is a fifth law, the law of healing, by dedicating and focusing our energy on making it a priority to connect to the God within on a daily basis, we acquire the spiritual truth and insight we need to grow, serve, and ascend. The sixth is the law of balance. Through giving and receiving unconditionally, we attain the state of spiritual equilibrium needed to serve life in the same selfless way God serves us. And seven is the law of freedom. We give one another freedom to choose the way we wish to use our energy to carry out our divine embodiment plan of spiritual growth and service. If and when we do curtail or usurp one another's freedom of choice, we forgive each other for our unloving use of energy. However, as she keeps stressing and emphasizing over and over again, awareness and intellectual understanding of these laws are not enough. We have to apply the spiritual truth that they contain.
Absolutely.
In the way we conduct our affairs.
Yes, a concept is totally useless. Everything has to be implemented, and that's how we grow.
Exactly.
In that regard, Jenny, how would you say you've changed since you've been receiving Mary's messages?
Well, the greatest changes have really occurred, I want to say, in the years since I've received the messages, because I never understood my life before. It was there were a lot of difficulties and a lot of challenges to face, and I just wondered if I was unlucky or God didn't love me or what was the problem that my life seemed to be going awry so much of the time. And
so
when I really understood and got the reasons why I went through what I did, it turned it totally around, because I could see everything that I had gone through in through a spiritual lens, and I understood it had made me a better, stronger person. Certainly a lot more tolerant and understanding towards others, which is one of my great lessons this lifetime. I never particularly liked unfairness or unkindness or meanness, and have reacted accordingly. And
yes.
So I've just learned to be more, as I said, tolerant.
Well, and I think it's very helpful when we begin to realize that we have created all of our scenarios, the outcomes of the relationships, by virtue of the stories that our mind makes up about the particular way that we see people and situations, and the ways that we keep flinging ourselves at life by adopting the same patterns over and over that sooner or later prove themselves to be very unworkable. So when we realize that everything is projection, and projection makes perception, and that we are actually experiencing the descent of our own karma, it makes us realize our tremendous responsibility in everything that has happened to us, and that we would never treat anyone the way we've treated ourselves, and we wouldn't want anyone to be as unaware and unconscious as we have been previously. So I think as we begin to understand our part in the unfolding of our lives, we develop a certain compassion and wisdom and discernment if we're astute and if we're open to change and growth, and that causes us to be much more understanding and compassionate of other people in the creation of the, let's say, the miscreation of their own lives and relationships, just as we have done the same thing. Would you agree with that?
Yes, and I have to say that all that, you know, I go through, I do with a certain sense of enthusiasm and joy. I don't always like, agree, or understand it at the time, but given a little hindsight and using the spiritual lens, I can see exactly, you know, why I went through what I did. And plus the fact, I have to say, Connie, it's made me a much better channel, because when I sit across from people, I really understand, for the most part, what everybody's gone through, because where they've been, I have been.
Yes. Well, now that brings me to a certain question. You said when we were talking earlier that Mother Mary has mentioned Americans. What has she said about Americans as a people in particular, and also about community and the importance of community?
America is meant to be the beacon of light. She has given me a lot of information on the evolution of the ego, and so we are really a teenage nation, and she calls those the shakers and the doers, the teenagers, but they need to be tempered with very strong spiritual leaders, and we've had a few of those, and you notice that if you go back in history, the nation has flourished under their guidance. In fact, our country was started by a group of people that were very much guided by the Ascended Masters, and the documents on which our nation rests are indeed sacred if you look at their content. They're very, very spiritually oriented.
Absolutely.
Now, she has said that America in the future is meant to be the beacon of light, and that the American people are most generous people, and that our nation has undergone the least bloodshed. That may sound odd if you think about what we were founded on, but nevertheless, in comparison to other nations, she said the least bloodshed has been shed here. So we haven't accrued as much negativity. We also, as many other nations, that is, and she also has said that we are a nation of, mutts, if you want to call it, the 57 Heinz variety. It's a mixture of cultures, and they have all come together, and we've been able to kind of turn into a wonderful potpourri. Our diet, our dress, you know, our way of looking at things and so forth, nowhere else in the world has it been as successful as it has been here, this mixture of cultures and races. That doesn't mean that we don't have a long ways to go, but we certainly have gone a lot further than any other nation on earth. She has also said that we are people who have been used to quilting bees and barn raisings in our early days, and that has not left this country. There's a sense of community. When there is trouble, people pull together, and it doesn't matter who you are or what you have. It's just that people reach out to help one another. And that is the reason right now for all of the changes we're undergoing, because we were getting so far off our track, focused on stuff, accumulating, amassing, consuming, that we had to change our values. And so we have to go through an economic hardship period to get back to figuring out what is important, what is enduring, and what lasts. So it's interpersonal relationships and values that we have to start thinking about.
Absolutely. She's given me the same message, too, and has said that this is going to be a period of cleansing and purification where we are all going to rise to the next level of consciousness and truly become saints in an era of saints, and that we're going to once again learn the value and sacredness of relationship, of sacred living, the importance of family, the importance of community and cooperation. And indeed, our nation understands how to cooperate and collaborate and solve problems and be innovative and very resourceful. I'm Connie Shaw, and you are listening to Ginny Virgil of Rumney, New Hampshire. Ginny is a messenger for Mother Mary's Modern Messages, a teacher of paranormal spirituality at Dartmouth College, and an intuitive counselor. If you'd like to contact Virginia for a particular session, you can reach her at Virginia, that's V-I-R-G-I-N-I-A dot Virgil, V-I-R-G-I-L, at roadrunner.com. That's roadrunner.com. We have just a few minutes left, Ginny. I'd like to ask you how your particular sessions work, and if you'd be willing to tell us one or two quick anecdotes about how Mother Mary works with you when you interact with clients that come seeking guidance.
Yes, I'd be happy to. The readings have to do with really who you are, why you're here, the different people that are in your life. She talks about the causes of physical illnesses, just any questions that people ask. But it really has to do with your life story, what you're here to learn, and what the reasons why you've gone through what you have. It's to help people see themselves in a better light, to give them hope, and to understand that there's been a purpose and always has been a purpose behind whatever they've undergone.
Now, do you do this on the telephone or only in person?
No, I do both. I do a lot on the telephone, especially during the winter here because we have so much snow. But no, I definitely work on the telephone. I've done some European calls and then sort of across the country. So it doesn't really matter. It just is that she tells me about the person, and so I don't have to be there with them. It's always nice on the first reading if they can be there, but it's not necessary.
I understand. And how far in advance are you booked? Is it possible to get on your calendar within a few weeks or so?
Usually what has happened now is that I used to be booked months in advance, and they don't. Mother Mary said they don't want that anymore. They want the time to be clear so that the people who really need the help come. And so I really noticed the people who are coming are people who are quite serious about growing and, need the help right now, because we're in rather dire times.
And so when you say they're quite serious about growing, what do you mean exactly, and how would you contrast that with some of the more frivolous categories of questions of people?
Well, it really is the sense of them wanting to understand how to move ahead. For instance, if people come to me and want to know about their future, she really goes, you know, emphasizes the fact that your future depends on what you do today and how you've looked at your past. So it's not about fortune telling. Never does she do that. It really has to do to help people have a better understanding of themselves and their place in this world and what they have to offer. Lots of times she'll talk about the service they're supposed to be performing, and it can be from the simplest to a complex, you know, kind of work or service. She always calls it service. She never refers to it as work, because she said service is something you do with joy, and it's the expression of gratitude to God for all those gifts that I already mentioned earlier.
Yes. Well, now, what would be some other types of questions that people could pose to you? And would you suggest that they use a tape recorder and also have a list of prepared questions to maximize their interaction with you on the phone?
Yes, the list of questions is good, because oftentimes things come out and they get focused on that because it's hit a chord, and so then they don't hear after that. So she answers usually what needs to be answered anyway. Many people bring their lists and they'll say, I'll say, do you have any last questions? And they'll say, no, she's answered them all before they even ask them. So, but it's nice to have that list, and I have the tape recorder. I record on this end, and it picks up their voice as well as mine so that they can hear the continuity between the two of us, the conversation that goes on between us.
So then the service that you offer is that Mother Mary gives the insights that are useful for that particular person regarding the purpose of their life, their primary life goal, what their service might be at this time, and to help them understand any prior conditions or overriding situations from prior lifetimes that might have a bearing on challenges at this time. Is there any other way that people could really maximize the encounter? Do they need to fast or pray beforehand, or to try to attune to Mary themselves, or can they just be very natural and spontaneous?
Well, they can be very natural and spontaneous, and I think that probably all the things you suggested would go after the reading, because they have to digest it, as Mother Mary says, and it sometimes takes time to do that, you know. And I never suggest people coming immediately back for a reading. I've had some people say, oh, I need to come back again. And her thing is always digest it for a while and then call back, you know, after you've had a chance to reflect and, you know, use some introspection about what has been said to you.
Yes, and of course, as you indicated before, it's not just devouring the words or information or treating you like a spiritual vending machine. It's really application, application, application. So I would think that after people have a session with you, they might reflect, meditate, contemplate, take some notes, write in a journal, be in nature, ask for a dream, and once they really apply what she has suggested, and they have done that so that there's nothing else to apply and it's become a part of their life and consciousness and lifestyle, then they would be more suitably in a position to get the next round of instruction. Would you say that's true?
That's true. And, you know, many of the people that come to me are in the mature cycle of spiritual evolution. Mother Mary talks about five cycles, which I'm sure we don't have time to go into, but many of them are in the mature cycle. That's the time when karma comes heavily into play. And if you don't believe in reincarnation or don't know much about it, then you feel as though, you know, you must be a bad person. This is the time when people say, why do bad things happen to good people? It's because at this point of your evolution, you can deal with karma. But if you don't realize that's what it is, you just feel like it's terrible luck, or God doesn't love you, or you must be a bad person. So what so many of the mature egos who come here learn is hope again, because they've repaid their karma beautifully, although the people or the situation they're working out with may not have agreed with them. The fact is they've turned the other cheek. They've done well in handling it. And they go away from here with a whole new outlook, not feeling as though they've failed, but as though they have triumphed. And that is so important. Without hope, I don't quite know, you know, how one can really go ahead.
Well, it sounds, Jenny, as if Mary and you are providing perspective for the clients so that they can understand that through the descent of their own self-created but unacknowledged and unaware karma, that they, in fact, have been given or have received their particular individual life lessons and challenges, which they agreed to before this incarnation, and they're given a certain type of awareness and perspective about how they're doing, and that they are moving forward in victory, that they're not victims, they're victors. And so she gives them a framework within which to see their lives so that they don't feel overwhelmed and put upon and rejected by God.
And really by others, because and mostly by themselves.
Yes.
Because what happens is when enough things happen to you, you go into self-rejection or self-pushing aside or, you know, punishing self.
Yes, I've heard people say jokingly, well, if I'm so great, how come my life is so terrible? Well, no. You cannot make a direct equation. In fact, as you indicated, it's the more mature souls that have the greatest challenges. And in fact, if you read any biography or autobiography of any great person, you will perceive that they had scores of challenges, rejections, betrayals, difficulties, losses, tragedies, one thing after another. And in fact, their greatness had to do with the way in which they met the seeming obstacles, and still they were undeterred.
Exactly.
So it's the more timid souls, it's the young souls that perhaps would not be able to withstand the descent of a tremendous amount or a particular type of karma. We are not given particular lessons until we have developed the strength of character, the determination, the grit, the persistence to be able to meet the challenge and to go on and not be buckled by it.
That's right. She has said that when you're in the baby stage and the grammar school stage, of course, there are no more of those little egos being born. But in the teenage stage, you're unable to really, you haven't built a backlog of life experiences, nor are you really interested in looking at them in terms of what you've learned from them. You're just, it's do. So in the mature, we go into the more internal and introspective mode to try to figure out who we are and why we're here beyond the physical material world.
In other words, the mature souls are much more inclined to be philosophical because they have the equipment and they're not so self-absorbed and self-centered as the...
Exactly. Exactly. And I want to say one thing here, Connie, that may surprise you, and it surprised me, but it makes good sense. And that is, she said, with the soul, there is no such thing as a black soul or a wayward soul, that indeed the soul is a spiritual instrument. It's a lesser vibration of our Christ-conscious self. It was a gift of mercy and grace, because when we were unable to stay connected to our Christ-conscious self, we still need a spiritual mentor. So the soul was given to us as that, and its voice of intuition, of course, speaks to us from our heart, and we need to listen to it and follow it because it's our best friend and spiritual mentor.
Oh, absolutely.
But she said what happens is when we finally reconnect to our Christ-conscious self, the soul goes and we become spirit, which is something that I had never really thought about or heard, but I think I've read it in one other, Revelations of John. But at any rate, I don't know whether that's of any interest, but it was startling to me.
Well, that is quite a lot of material you've given us as food for thought, Jenny. I see by the clock that we are out of time. If there is one final sentence or thought you'd like to leave with our listeners, this is your chance.
It's really love without strings attached and experiencing oneness with all and expressing that oneness with all that we are really reaching for. And that is what we have to keep in mind. That those are the two goals we're trying to reach. And if we can do those, we have succeeded completely in terms of what we need to do while we're here on Earth as a spiritual being.
Oh, Ginny, thank you so much. Your material has been riveting. You've been listening to Virginia Virgil. You can reach Ginny at virginia.virgil@roadrunner.com. Would you be willing to return to our show in the next couple of months, Ginny?
Absolutely.
Good.
I'd be delighted to.
All right. Well, we will make a date, and I'll contact you so that we can hear another half hour of the wonderful things Mary's been sharing with you. That concludes our show. And as I said, you've been listening to Virginia Virgil of Rumney, New Hampshire, who is a media guest, a Marian messenger, a college instructor on the topic of paranormal spirituality, and an intuitive counselor. Thanks for spending time with us. Visit our website at www.conniesahaw.com for more exciting interviews with amazing people who are making significant contributions to their communities. In today's fast-changing world, your love, talents, and experience are vitally needed to alleviate human suffering. Won't you reflect on how you can join or create a selfless service project to feed, house, educate, or hire people who may be waiting for you to be the angel that can make a huge difference in their lives? You're the one they've been waiting for to give them hope and a new direction. You know you can do it. Just commit and enjoy the adventure. And thank you.